the Red Hat X podcast series, discussing topics around application modernization, cloud-native development, securing workloads in the cloud, and partnering with Red Hat. Thank you for joining us today. It's a Tech Talk episode on the Red Hat X podcast series. My name is Brian, and today I am here with John Aaron, founder and CEO of Aaronetics. We're redefining security from your pocket. Today, we're going to meet John Aaron. We're going to hear all about Aaronetics, how and why it was founded, what solutions they offer, and how also to retain control of your system and take action against unknown future events. We have a fascinating discussion coming. John, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. First time here on the podcast. So first of all, just get to know you a little bit. Tell us about yourself and what you do. And then you got to tell us what you're nerding out on right now as well.
So I'm John Aaron, and I founded Aaronetics. And the direct answer is on the West Coast. I actually am a climber, a cyclist, a camper, a skier, cross-country runner, open water swimmer. On the East Coast, I'm a computer hacker.
I like that. So in other words, you nerd out on all things outdoors and hacking, depending on where you're at.
And breaking stuff.
Breaking stuff. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I really like that. So do you participate in all the marathons, challenges? I'm trying to think of all the ones that are out there now.
I've been requested to assist people competing in Ironman.
Okay.
To supporting people who run marathons, to people that want to ride 100 miles. For some reason, my brain is just good at breaking down barriers.
Nice.
And I don't think of 100 miles as anything that's that unattainable. So I was like, you want to do that? Let's do that.
Yeah.
Let's leave it 2 in the afternoon and do that.
I like it. So have you done the thing where you start out, I had a friend, by the way, you might appreciate this one. You start out at the beach in Hawaii and you go all the way up. What is it? Is it Mauna Kea? Is that right? You know, 14,000 feet, ride all the way up, ride all the way back. Does that sound like fun to you?
It does. It does.
I like that.
That's a version of my life I really enjoy.
Nice. So pushing the boundaries, I mean, that really does help kind of founding a company and then doing what you're doing. If you didn't have that kind of mental toughness, I guess, and that personality, I think it'd be tough to do.
It's the mental resilience that you have from running a 50K or an 18K and mountain running, or riding that far, or climbing significant grades, where failure is not an option. You have to diversify.
Yeah.
That's how you prevent failure.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's good advice.
And it's a sense of resilience that you have from those experiences that really reinforce that the company is just going to make it.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's good advice. Well, speaking of that, tell us about Aaronetics and what you do at the company.
Well, I'm the CEO and founder of Aaronetics. I made the Ohio LLC March of 2017, and not 90 days later, I nearly died in a cycling accident. Which took me a year and a half to 2 years of going to the hospital every day. And in that time period of going to the hospital, I said, hey, what about this idea? Because my own home router had intrusions from a national adversary on it, and I didn't know. So I've currently built software to alleviate the unknown.
Okay. So now, Aaronetics, the company in general, to give us a little more of a background well, I'll tell you what, you know, do this. Give us a little bit of a historical perspective of the company too. You know, you talked about what kind of prompted you for wanting to create, you know, your company and stuff, but tell us a little bit more about kind of how the company developed, you know, what you're working on right now, some of the pain points and solutions that you've, you know, been able to solve as well.
The company was founded based on my sysadmin experience. I recently met up with a gentleman I've met when I was definitely a teenager, and he reminded me of the fact that back then he tried to get me a job, really questioning why I was making a company. And I had my young youth and lower teens as a sysadmin field technician around Ohio or the southeastern United States. And it was from that experience that was quite diversified that I really saw there's a solution at corporations and businesses. And so the sale and the national intrusions we have really are indicative of the pain that we have as a nation. That if we can lift one company and we can lift all companies, we make the nation more resilient. So what we've done is create a company that is fully remote, that wants to help large corporations and our small companies as well, because we can lift one, we can lift all.
That's great. So you said fully remote as well. Was this pre-COVID, by the way, that you went fully remote, or did you create that with that intent in mind? Because this was what, 10 years ago now? Is that correct, that you started Aeronex?
About, yes. Okay. So we were always fully remote, and COVID just reinforced that an office space is not really a requisite. We just kind of go with the flow of time, and we'll eventually have an office space on the Federal National Parkway, like most of our other companies that help the United States government. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, that's just an office space down there, and I can be wherever. It's so fully remote isn't just because of COVID. It's just convenient now.
I like, you know, forward thinking. It's funny because, you know, I've been doing a lot of remote work myself, you know, for so many years. And then when COVID hit, people were saying, oh, you know, well, I got to finally figure out this whole Zoom thing, you know, and then I would just kind of like, oh, yeah, I've been doing this for quite some time and stuff. But, you know, back in the day when I was even thinking about the whole remote thing, it was kind of ridiculed. People were just kind of like, why would you do that? You know, this is kind of dumb, and you need to be in person, need to be in an office and stuff like that. I mean, did you get that as well?
I got the weird looks of, why do you not have an office, or why do you not have a collaborative space to operate in?
Yeah.
And so I hand them articles from Harvard Business Review or the MIT Research and say, hey, here's an idea. That's why I don't have that. Yeah. I do miss collaboration.
Yeah.
But then again, you just have to adapt.
Yeah, there's always ways around it, which is good. And there's ways to get creative about it. Well, you know, I really like how you described, you know, when I was mentioning the podcast, doing the introduction for the show today, how you described what you do. And the idea is that you're retaining control of your system. You're taking action against unknown future events. You sort of mentioned that, you know, a couple of minutes ago when you were saying why you founded Aeronetics. So talk about what you're currently working on right now.
We are researching kernel modules as a container for Red Hat's OpenShift. So we can deploy these things called clusters everywhere.
Okay.
That's what I'm geeking out on, because it's actually a little bit complex.
Yeah. Well, give us a little more about it. Tell us, you know, give us some of the complexities.
The way clusters were before OpenShift were literally computer boxes using specialized software to communicate amongst themselves, with one as a control plane host. Mm-hmm. But OpenShift from Red Hat allows you to have all these boxes as virtual machines in a computer, where that control plane host can create other nodes. So I'm researching how to put our kernel module that has that full functionality mm-hmm. on those nodes that are destroyed and birthed. So the big corporations that use OpenShift, as well as myself, the small company that uses OpenShift, can regain control of the unknown events mm-hmm. on their computer.
Okay, so talk about how you can safely operate a computer from the perspective with, let's just say, flaws in the hardware and also with flaws in software. Talk about that a little bit.
Brian, I recently applied to RSA, and like most, are turned down. And really, the new flaw in as much is an unopened laptop in its box. When you open that laptop, you have no idea if it's been infiltrated or not.
Yeah.
So we do have YouTube videos of known hackers, known security researchers going into hardware flaws on the Intel chipset or the von Neumann architecture. Mm-hmm. In Harvard architectures for your car. There was recently a Wired article when a young teenager mm-hmm. hacked a Tesla. And so if you have that car and you're hacked, how would you know?
Yeah. I've always kind of wondered how that would work out.
Right. Because then you have a lurker in your car then. And
yeah.
Then what if they just say, you're not driving anymore?
Exactly. Yeah. 80 miles an hour. Who knows?
Right. Mm-hmm. Or if you're in one of the DoD places and you have to fire a projectile, but you press the trigger and it doesn't do anything. It's problem from our national adversaries. We have a large concern about the health of our networks, which is why zero trust is a very large concept nowadays. Mm-hmm. And the CMMC, the cyber maturity model, outline how to be secure from NIST.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're saying that truly, though, you know, you get a computer, you're opening it up, and yes, of course, you know, you have no idea what's happened, who worked on it, you know, maybe somebody got a hold of it. You just really, truly don't know.
Right.
So you're saying you're going in there and what are you doing in order to ensure that that computer is a safe asset to your company?
Well, what we're proposing is with flaws in hardware and software that we know about, we're putting a kernel module in Windows or Linux at the final layer between firmware and software that talks to your mobile phone.
Okay.
And we use a AI machine learning system totally within your control. And we let you know on your mobile phone, which is with you all the time in 2020, that that's an outlier event and you should take control or pay attention to this event. What do you want to do?
Mm-hmm. Now, what about with stolen identities? How do you handle that?
We recognize, as a family member of mine has had a stolen identity and money drained from her bank account, that current solutions just aren't solving anything. Totally unrelated is that you can freeze your credit.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean they can actually access your credit, but neither can you.
Yeah.
So is that really a solution?
Yeah.
So stolen identities is a totally a thing that we've had multiple intrusions and the attackers know of your habits. They know how you behave. They know where you go get coffee in the morning. They know where you shop. They know where you don't shop. They probably know what car you drive, what shoe size you have.
Mm-hmm.
There is a thought out there to take these identities and devalue it and just say, hey, there's my social. It's not my problem that you have that data. And that just shows that we have a greater problem out there, that what we need in the 2020 plus years are actual real solutions. We need to redesign a lot of stuff from a whole company to maybe a whole country's behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have any specific ideas towards that?
What we've done is make a computer program that is entirely within your control. And I don't, when I license it to anyone, it just works for you. Mm-hmm. And I don't have any control of that. We fix your problem and such. But the way we try to fix things and ideas to fix these problems is to start devaluing data, or at least adding our solution to these types of things. Mm-hmm. We even are putting in a proposal to take our product and build an operating system around it, fully aware that the current operating systems, not to name names, but 90 some percent of one company is everywhere. And it is just insecure.
So if a person, you know, you mentioned the, you know, hackers understanding our habits and, you know, everything, all the personal information about us. And then of course, with the stolen identities though, what sort of things, you know, can people expect? Like if we were to look towards the future in the sense of saying, you know, we're using Aeronetics and we're also trying to move forward as a country as a whole, what sort of things do you think we could expect to see in the coming years?
Brian, have you seen a movie by Ready Player One?
Oh yeah. Read the book too.
Yeah, it's a good book.
Yeah, it is.
And so I think we can both agree that when Facebook came out and went to Metaverse, everything, it became something that we all expected.
Yep.
And it's also scary. So in the future, it's going to get a little more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Unless we start as a nation, adopt small companies' solutions like mine.
Mm-hmm.
There is a company out in the West Coast that actually, I do not remember the name of, and I don't remember what they actually do, but they did have a capability that actually scared me.
Hmm.
And it's a little bit like the Minority Report.
Hmm.
I do want that, but I really don't want that.
Yeah.
And so we need better solutions as a country, if we're going to compete.
Yeah.
Naming political events, but yes, we have those things going on currently.
Yeah.
It's a method to retain security.
You know, it's interesting you're bringing this stuff up. You know, you were talking about how, you know, freezing credit is one of the solutions, but like you said, it doesn't really solve the problem. It's a Band-Aid essentially. But then you got to look at, like, well, you know, bringing up Minority Report as well. The whole problem with that concept was that they were predicting the behavior based on an algorithm and not necessarily based on a human decision. And so, you know, was it 100% accurate? No, it wasn't even. I mean, it was another option, but it wasn't the solution. And so you're right. It's like, where are we going with where are we going with our solutions? You know, are we trying to put the Band-Aid on it? Are we trying to fix a problem, but it actually creates another problem, or what's going on? So I'm glad you brought those examples up.
Right. And I see that our technology and our company, Brian, really erase the human entanglement.
Yeah.
That I'm just a person like you. And I can do what I can do, but there's some things I cannot do, and there's some things I cannot do quick enough. So I need a machine to do that for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, a very, very simple example and a little bit of a side note, but I've been kind of diving into YouTube, trying to understand, you know, how to, because, you know, we're all kind of going, okay, we got to get our content out there. You know, we're doing the podcast here. What about video? Right. What about YouTube and stuff? And so part of what I've been doing is researching, you know, how do you succeed on YouTube? How do you, you know, work with the YouTube algorithm. I would say that the common advice that I'm even hearing right now, once again, this goes back to what you're saying, is that the algorithm is one thing, but you still have to create content for people because the people are the ones that are consuming it, not the algorithm. So once again, it goes back to that. Okay, cool. You can, the machine learning, yes, but there's still the human element that we just haven't figured that out very well yet.
Right, right. Exactly. Yes, you need to participate in the algorithm that's on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it's not a machine that watches this.
Yeah.
And so we still need that human behavior. We still need that human to do that. We still need you and I. There's recently an article that we cannot trust AI or we cannot trust machine learning. When really, I, to some capacity, I do or do not disagree, but I realize that we still need us. That robots will never be completely capable of acting all the time,
mm-hmm.
like you or I. That human Turing capability just may not be there. And there's currently a contest on a government website for a Turing prize researching that.
Hmm.
That's a difficult, that's a heavy math problem,
yeah.
Shall we say.
Yeah. Well, do you think that we're relying too much on the machine learning AI side of things? You know, almost like a crutch?
I think we're actually relying too much on the human more than the AI at the moment.
Okay. Okay.
That we are stuck using people when we could be using an AI or ML algorithm. We're stuck on certifications. Many of my colleagues, including myself, have no certifications, but we're good at what we do. There was a conversation I had recently on this company that is DARPA funded on breaking software. And they wanted me to try it out. And I thought to myself, I'm pretty good at breaking software myself. I don't really need your software. I even broke their software.
Yeah.
And it was like, and you got funding for this.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, you mentioned earlier, you know, Intel and von Neumann architectures. I mean, clearly we've taken that for granted, but we obviously need something, and you've even kind of alluded to this, that we need something that's going to work for us, you know, now and into the future. What options do you see could exist for us for safe operation of computers moving forward?
We could, for a safe operation of computer moving forward, we need to use a little bit of blockchain, not to be a trendy thing, but blockchain does have its applications. When I first heard about blockchain about a decade plus ago, it was intelligent math. I don't do anything with it now. We need to have a little AI ML that works for us, not against us. Like driving your car, you need to turn on your car and have no incident.
Mm-hmm.
It just needs to work. You expect the gas pedal to provide that amount of gas and it just work. I had my car gas thing not work appropriately and poured out gas in engaging my turbo. And I went really fast in the really small 25-mile-an-hour zone. Mm-hmm. And it scared me because it was broken.
Yeah.
And it's that style of, hey, we need to be able to fix these things fairly readily so they're not an issue.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm curious about information security. It's free. How do we cross the information and learning gap?
Brian, that was an article that's referencing an article that I found from a colleague of mine mm-hmm. that I've bookmarked on LinkedIn. And it's discussing how the prices for information security are trending to zero because we're all certified and we can all provide good services that we don't necessarily need to charge for what we charge for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's referencing to, hey, it's free, just take it.
Yeah.
Similar to, in effect, how open source software really is free as in free beer.
Yeah.
And so what we're really shooting for with security being free is a different paradigm on how we think about it when we have to devalue things that we value because the attackers know your behavior and they know how you operate.
Now, how do you behave online with, you know, decades of intrusion, malware, all that good stuff? How do we move forward with that?
Stay as anonymous as possible.
Okay.
That's my... That's anonymous. If you've got to be online, good luck to you.
Yeah.
But I mean it though. Stay as anonymous as possible. That most of my IDs are just strings. It's nothing you would actually pronounce. A machine can't do anything with that. It's just a string.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to water down everything that's present everywhere. The GDPR is available and for use in the Eurozone.
Mm-hmm.
And our state of California passed their version of the similar analogous thing. But as a nation, we need to disentangle that so we can be safer online. It's just interesting that it's taken this far and that in Web 2.0, our software would live happily. And those who are enjoying the current Web 3.0 with Metaverse, we still need our software
mm-hmm.
to be safe. It's one of the intrinsic backbone softwares out there, like Cisco.
So, okay, yeah. So like the internet didn't turn out the way we'd hoped it would, but what do we do? How do we fix that moving forward as an industry as well?
That's a very good question. That's just why the New York Times posted that article and it has the picture of a crabby cat on the front of it. I don't know if you've seen the article, Brian, but it's a beautiful picture of a really angry cat.
Okay.
And it's something that you would almost never see walking around the streets of Europe where there's cats everywhere or even in your own household.
Mm-hmm.
Cats are mostly happy creatures, right? So what we have is to disentangle everything that's out there and anonymize everything and devalue what you can. We need to shuffle up how credit reporting occurs. We need to shuffle up how your post office operates. We need to shuffle up the entire fabric of what we know and then give a little bit of that to a machine that can act with us and not creep us out like Minority Report
mm-hmm.
or Ready Player One. I don't want at least my life or your life to become a game like that.
So now, do you see those as, you know, permanent solutions? You're talking about shuffling things up and, you know, anonymizing things and stuff like that. Like, do you see those as realistic solutions? How long would that take? I know those are tough questions. Hard to answer.
They are good questions. And to really understand what we have to do as a democratic republic, or a city in the Democratic Republic, or a company in the Democratic Republic,
mm-hmm.
we need to change our behaviors, not to carry on the way it once was.
Yeah.
We all have to adapt with COVID, right? We need to carry on and think of solutions
mm-hmm.
that we can actually coexist. And it can be a permanent solution. But what we've built is the opportunity that learns from your behavior.
Mm-hmm.
that's with you. And so we need solutions that actually can coexist in a permanent manner for a long time in the future.
Yeah.
So when quantum computing comes around, or they start blockchaining Bitcoin things, we actually have a known method that can verify it, that that's actually the proper data. We need a manner that can actually suggest and verify it, that that data that we have is not altered or broken.
What's it gonna, what do you think it's gonna take to actually achieve those goals though? You know, like, why haven't we done it so far? What's holding us back, and what do we need in order to make that happen?
I think we're held back because we have an entire workforce that's built on heavy marketing, the lack of innovation. There's a recent article I read on, I forget his first name, but his last name is Fresnel. He made the Fresnel lens. And he had about 20 patents issued before he was 39. And how, if you have a lower life expectancy, you have innovation everywhere because you have no time to really fix your problems. And if we have longer lifespans like we have in this country, there's no innovation. And so we're kind of in that paradigm. We're kind of stuck there. We're okay with the current solutions.
Yeah. We're comfortable.
We're comfortable with them.
Yep.
And it's that manner of, hey, I nearly died myself. So let's rush and get this done while we can.
Yeah. No, you know, it's a really, really good perspective because you're right that, you know, life, who knows, right? Life is short. It can be tomorrow. We don't know. And there's so many. Yeah, I'm with you. There's no urgency, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. That's there what makes be. That's a good word, urgency.
Yeah.
There's that the fire underneath your bum that keeps you moving. We've become complacent with current solutions. I recently learned of another company software that was, as the joke back 20 years ago, was this company was transferring so much data, it was almost breaking the internet. Well, that company's still around and they're still transferring many times more data. And it's something that we need to redesign what we have. The internet wasn't built to transfer a significant amount of data all over the place.
Yeah, you know, some of the greatest success stories I've heard is when, you know, either the person or the situation kind of like backs against the wall sort of, you know, thing. And it's like, this has to get done right now or else, or I have to succeed or else, you know, et cetera. And I wish I could impart the urgency and the proactive nature as, you know, move, always think forward and stop thinking so reactively. I mean, that's where I would be at.
Spot on. It follows from training for a marathon or training for a 50K or climbing 13, 14 grade routes. It's that sense of urgency. You may not have the solution on the next move, but you've got to move forward. You have to try something new.
Yeah. Yep. I know. I saw a interesting little post, little cartoon post, you know, and it said something about, you know, you have a disease that was caused by your diet. And the patient asks the doctor, so should I change my diet? And the doctor says, no, we have a pill for that. And it's just like, you know, there are so many things in life that could be easily prevented. Granted, we don't know what we don't know sort of thing. But can we start learning towards that? Can we start, like I said, going proactively to make decisions that help us moving forward instead of just kind of ho-humming, you know, our complacency? And then, oh, crap. Log4j happened. It's like,
oh my gosh, yes. Log4j happened. And if you go back 20 years ago, you have the marketing giants pushing Java.
Yeah.
HP Compaq pushing Java with gigantic marketing budgets so you would adopt Java. And then 20 years later, oh, never mind. Log4j.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
It's like,
What would be interesting is for somebody now to do a study on, could that have been prevented? And if so, what should we have done? And how do we now apply that to the present?
Right.
I'm sure somebody's doing that or somebody has done that. I haven't read that yet, but
I hope someone's doing that.
Yeah. Well, I'm very curious about your partnership with Red Hat. How did that start and what have been some of the success factors in that synergy with you?
Well, I definitely took a phone call from Sherry Eisten when I was at a convention hall a while ago. And she found my company online and wanted to pitch partnering with Red Hat.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I'm primarily a Slackware user and I actually bought Red Hat 5 and I kept on using both. And it just grew from there. And then I happened to have, hey, let's build this kernel module. And how do we do that? And so I'm pretty deep into the Red Hat ecosystem.
Nice.
With a certified product and an upcoming OpenShift certified product as well. We are not quite listed on the marketplace, though we're researching why that is going to happen mm-hmm. and when that's going to happen, but it is available.
Good. Well, I'm glad you're partnering and moving forward in that manner. So best of luck and success to you with that. And thank you, by the way, for sharing your perspectives on all this stuff. I mean, this is really good. Great information. It's neat to see what you're doing. I love your approach to it. So I think that's fantastic. Now, do you have any final thoughts, tips, or key takeaways that you'd like us to walk away with?
One of my favorite books, Brian, is Ignorance. Hmm. And one line in that book is it's difficult to find a black cat in a dark room when there is no cat.
Hmm.
And that's kind of how we operate now. It's why we have these. Now, I do take pictures of happy cats everywhere, but we have images of angry cats mm-hmm. as a company logo or a company image. And it's, hey, this is why it's an angry cat.
That's a really good quote, though. I think it's a good, I mean, it's very profound if you think about it, but it's kind of one of those like, are you asking enough questions? Are you, Yeah, you got me thinking about that now.
Right.
I appreciate
it's
that.
It's the same book that actually mentions that every time a scientist dies, we have more questions. It's like, quit dying.
Next step, immortality.
Right.
Yeah, I know. That's great. Well, John, where can we go for more information on Aeronetics and then also just anything we've talked about today? You mentioned a couple of resources.
You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on the Red Hat ecosystem. And you can find my website at aeronetics.com.
All right.
And if you need me to help you in an emergency manner, it's not too much of a puzzle, but you can find my own personal cell phone number on the website if you need any security advice in the moment that you need that security advice.
Awesome. I appreciate you offering that. Cool. Well, John, Awesome. Thank you. I really appreciate this. Thank you so much for taking the time and joining us today.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for having me.
John Aaron, founder and CEO of Aeronetics. My name is Brian, and thank you again for joining us here on the Red Hat X podcast series. For more information on Aeronetics and our discussion today, head on over to aeronetics.com. That's AeronetiCS.com. Have a wonderful day. We'll talk to you in the next episode.